You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Jonathan David Lewis. Jonathan is the author of Brand vs. Wild, Building Resilient Brands for Harsh Business Environments. He is an engaging and authoritative speaker on shaping a brand that can survive and thrive in today's tough, uncertain world. As partner and strategy director at McKee Wallwork & Company, Jonathan led his firm to be recognized by industry purveyor Advertising Age as a national leader in branding and marketing, winning the Southwest Small Agency of the Year, National B2B Campaign of the Year, and National Best Places to Work awards. A branding and business strategist, Jonathan honed his skills during the lean years of the Great Recession, helping brands navigate today's unforgiving new business paradigms. Jonathan's opinions are highly sought out by numerous business and marketing publications, including Forbes, Digiday, Advertising Age, where he explores the factors that lead to stalled growth and the principles proven to help companies navigate the ambiguities and dangers of the brand wilderness. Jonathan, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. I'm excited to be here.
I am excited to discuss that aforementioned brand wilderness. So by your definition, for the folks listening, what is kind of your summary of what that wilderness looks like?
You know, on one hand, I think it represents an emotion, a feeling that we all are experiencing today, which is just complete confusion, chaos, feeling overwhelmed with all of the changes in technology and politics and business. It's just too much. And so we feel isolated and we kind of turn inward. And that, I think, emotionally is the wilderness. Technically, we have defined it based on our research that led to the book. We identified 7 factors that affect business growth. 3 of them are external. And so we define the wild as those external factors that actually dislodge us or disorient us or cause us to feel lost. And those are the economy itself. So a recession would often cause all of us to feel disoriented, aggressive competition, and even industry disruption of some kind, new technology and new regulation.
Well, those are the external factors.
Yes.
So what are some of the internal factors as well?
Yeah, so of the 7 factors, 3 of them are external. They're what we define as the wild. And those, as we learned through the research, cause companies to feel lost. Well, what happens is the next 4 factors take effect. And those are internal. They're within our control. They're within every company, even as we speak. And what's fascinating is there's actually a very predictable path that companies take when faced with a challenge like this. So those 4 internal factors are things like fear or a loss of nerve in the marketplace, a loss of focus with their brand, inconsistency, and even ultimately a lack of alignment, which we call real savagery.
Wow. Well, and it is an interesting time because I guess in focusing so much on businesses, on organizational entities, there are these challenges. But then I think that when you look at the bigger picture of, consumers and how they experience all of this, there is this this, well, chaos, I think, was one of your first first descriptors of this wilderness that we find ourselves in. And it is confusing to navigate. So with that unpacked at a very basic level, what is, how does one make sense of the wilderness at hand today?
Well, I mean, I think there's a number of things to consider. First and foremost, everybody is feeling it. Everybody feels lost. Nobody knows what's going on. And even when you're looking at, you know, maybe those who we think know what's going on, the Elon Musks or Bezos or whoever of the world, they don't know what's going on. I mean, they can't predict the future. They simply understand a few of the new principles required for success in this modern economy, where most of us are still clinging to some old ideas of success, things like size, strength, longevity, when in fact, what used to work, what used to lead to success in business for the last 100 years is actually a vulnerability today, where we are in many ways seeking static strength, where the new titans of industry, those that are really finding success in the modern economy, understand that there's new ways to succeed. We have to move on past these old strategies. So that, I think that's the first thing. The second thing is to consider and understand that there's nothing we can really, most of us can do to affect the wild. I mean, we're not going to change the economy all by ourselves. But what can we affect? What is within our control? Those four statistically significant factors that affect business growth, they're internal, they're inside our companies, they're within our control. If we start there, we actually have a chance.
So I love when you said that what used to work is a vulnerability today, because I see that constantly with the disruption of new media. And whatever comes along, we think, oh, we'll just do what we've always done with that thing. And, you know, I even see it with you know, everybody talking about live video. And I'm seeing people, now we will do live video every day. And I feel like I just don't know if that, I mean, you talk about size being one of those things that's now a vulnerability. And I wonder about kind of just the barrage of we will do this constantly, if that's mm-hmm. something similar too, if we're still focusing on quantity as opposed to quality.
Totally. I mean, it's one of the very predictable responses to the wild, and that is what we call the wild turns brands wild. They act very inconsistently. And so what you're describing, which is very true, is when you don't know what to do, often you just do. You just act for action's sake. And so you see these new tactics come across, whatever they are. I mean, we all see them every day. Live video, or, I mean, it used to be blogs, then it was social media, and now it's just live video, and it's just on and on and on. There's nothing inherently wrong with those new tactics, but chasing after the new thing is not a strategy. It's no way to succeed. It's just tactical. It's just tactical thinking.
So what makes that kind of inconsistency for those that might recognize this potentially happening in their organizations? What makes that kind of inconsistency dangerous?
Well, it's interesting. When you consider this very predictable response to disruption, from fear to loss of focus to inconsistency to savagery or lack of alignment, along the way, there are certain behaviors that can actually make matters worse. And one of them is acting wildly, acting inconsistently. And when you're lost in the wilderness, from a survival psychology standpoint, certainly, and definitely in business, when you're lost in this wilderness, when you're acting inconsistently, you're going to fail more often, which just piles on and demoralizes your team and makes you feel more lost. And you lose your confidence, and it reinforces the fear that you're already feeling. So it, in many ways, even beyond just tactically being a terrible idea, it starts wearing at your confidence and increasing your fear. And so in marketing, I mean, we see this in a number of ways. If you've had a new CEO every year or two for the last 5 years, yeah, you are wildly inconsistent. You know, I mean, if you have a new agency or a new marketing partner, or you haven't run a campaign for more than 6 months, you are wildly inconsistent, and you are exhibiting behavior that is very predictable and the opposite of what is required to succeed in today's new economy.
Well, I love the and I'm glad you started to go there a little bit, because when we were first connected, I saw this the name of your book and the allusions to the wild and the wilderness, and I have to confess that being someone that works in branding and marketing, we certainly have our tropes in terms of how we talk about branding and marketing, and most of us have heard most of the allusions, the metaphors, the inside of the box, outside of the box, the circles, mm-hmm. the whatever else. But this was new to me, and as you walk through, the general chaos of the market today is the wild. And your survival psychology there of losing confidence, fear, shame, all of these things, it really fits in a very powerful way. I kind of want to take a I don't know if it's a step to the side or behind the scenes, but when did you realize working with clients that this felt like a comparison, because it's a new one to me and a very effective one, I think.
Yeah, certainly. You know, what's interesting about it is I think it's so effective and it resonates so much because it's true. You know, it's not just some high-minded concept that is easy to bat around. What we discovered was that our proprietary research, which we've conducted over 10 years, actually correlated almost scarily close to the latest in survival psychology when we started comparing the two. And the kind of the baseline truth that we uncovered was that there really, in many ways, is no difference between a group of people that crash land on top of a mountain and psychologically a group of professionals in a boardroom dealing with a brand challenge. I mean, each group goes through the same predictable response to that challenge in terms of psychology. So our story actually begins over 10 years ago when my company faced our own wilderness, and we made the Inc. 500 list of fastest growing companies, and we were ecstatic. I mean, we thought we made it. You know, we proved to the world, here we are, look how fast we're growing, we're on top of the world. And to our great surprise, the year that we made the Inc. 500 fastest growing companies list, we stalled as a company. And over the next 2 to 3 years, we actually experienced near 100% turnover. It was about 98%. Now, for a professional services firm, that is death. I mean, it was an extremely difficult period for our company. And so during this time where we were in our own wilderness, not understanding why we were drifting and stalled as a company, we turned to the research. And at that time is when we first conducted our research. We had access to these other Inc. 500 winners. And so we conducted our first national study looking at why do some companies face adversity and get through it and even thrive? Why do other companies face adversity and decline or even disappear? And that's when we first discovered the seven factors. Over the next 10 years, we replicated the study in another national research project. And then it really became our niche as a firm where we work with stalled, stuck, and stale companies. So it's been born out of our own experience and then confirmed through our research. And then when we started looking at the actual survival psychology and discovered that humans are human regardless of the scenario, that's when kind of the origins of this book came to be.
Well, I think that, great books, great concepts are so important, but I think that it's even better when it's backed up by research, and I think so few business books do that, so I can't wait to get my hands on that and check it out, especially thinking about kind of your thesis that you spelled out, that the psychology is very similar, because that, to me, you say it correlates. That sounds like it probably would. It's very true. I teach branding and marketing in addition to running a very small professional services firm. But in doing that, in talking with the other disciplines within business, finance, management, accounting, their bedrocks are in place. Some things are different. There's been updates, but it's not, you know, I hate to go to the disrupted well that we use all the time, but branding and marketing are fundamentally different than they were previously. I am excited to shake this research at people too, to point this out, because it's so big and it has huge implications, not just, well, I guess in how we do the work, but in tactically how we do the work. But as you introduce these psychological factors, which I think a lot of us that are either consulting, working in firms like we do, or that are managing this from the inside out and are being met with resistance and challenges on all of this, to understand that headspace where people are coming from.
You know, it's funny you mentioned some of these other professional services industries, in that, you know, we all have our challenges, of course, and I completely respect the other industries, but we joke often that it would be nice to have our own tax code, you know, where there's like this foundation of right and wrong, and we know how to react, and there it is a formula. Where in marketing, I was even listening to something this morning, you know, we have tried so much as a culture to quantify everything in our reality. Everything is the scientific method, and is ones and zeros, and is, you know, we're quantifying constantly. And the one thing that continues to sort of defy our quantification is humanity, the human heart. And it's very difficult to quantify us. We aren't ones and zeros, even though we want to believe that we can do that. And because of that, because marketing fundamentally is about the heart and about human nature, we're constantly rediscovering and trying to figure out how do we manage it and influence it for the positive.
Well, and so much of it is the heart, you know, externally in terms of what the output is, but even internally, what we struggle with. I was just speaking at an event yesterday where an individual, he had a lot of takeaways, but he's like, I'm just going to be met with so much resistance internally. Mm-hmm. I feel for the guy, because I've been there both internally at organizations and externally. You know, when we're in the business that we're in, we're telling people things that they don't want to hear constantly. And I think that as frustrating as that can be, it's probably valuable to have some of this research so that you can understand a bit more where someone's coming from, so that you can approach this challenge from a different place instead of the banging your head against the wall place.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess fundamentally, what I think we were discussing, what we discovered is, if you want effective world-class marketing, it doesn't begin with a set of to-dos or tactics. It begins with your team and with your internal health and organization. And that's why the book really focuses on these group and team dynamics that are so unhealthy in many of these companies facing challenges and disruption.
Well, so that's a good segue, because I know that one of the important topics covered is you know, how a leader can use that fear that we've talked about, and keep from being paralyzed in the midst of all of this. So how can that work? How can we use this?
Well, one of the theories we draw from in the book is Dr. John Leach's 10-80-10 theory. He's one of the world's leading experts in survival psychology, and he says that in any survival scenario, 10% of folks are going to be prepared. They're going to react with logic and really rationally deal with the problem. 80% of us are going to be paralyzed. We're going to freeze, and we're not equipped to deal with that disruption. And then another 10% of us actually panic. We make the situation worse, and it becomes more dangerous because of how we're acting. So when you look at how people and companies react to disruption, Pepsi, United, et cetera, recently, I mean, 90% of us are not going to react well. And most of us are just going to freeze because we're afraid. We don't know what else to do. So as a leader, I mean, the first thing is to understand that. You need to understand that you, yourself, and most of your team probably aren't currently equipped, although you can be. And you're going to freeze. But it doesn't have to stop there. You don't have a choice in how you're physically going to respond to fear or disruption or challenges. You are going to respond, fight, flight, freeze. However, once you have responded, then it's up to you. You can stay there and further decline and make terrible choices, or you can break through and push on. And that's where we get into this concept of you see these people and organizations that face the fear and push through. And of course, that is, you know, by definition, courage. But the other cool thing we see in survival scenarios that's been documented, but there's still more research to do, is this strange phenomenon where if you've been in a prolonged state of fear or danger, if you're hanging from a side of a cliff and you've been there for several hours, or if you're in the middle of the desert and it's been several days, there's this strange phenomenon where there's an extreme clarity that can occur, where a lot of the noise in reality, a lot of the noise that it's hard for us to get rid of because we're looking at the headline, checking our email, you know, listening to the radio. There's just so much noise. When you're afraid, it can actually declutter and allow you to focus on really the task at hand. So while it can paralyze, if you're a leader who understands that, you can then turn around and use it to give you extreme focus and help you through whatever dangerous situation you're facing.
Well, I love that. I love the 10-80-10, and especially those examples that you mentioned, because I think that we can see it there and think about how we might be able to apply all of that as well. So what advice do you have for brands that are drifting, or I think you call it walking in circles?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's another really fascinating piece of research we discovered, was that, you know, everyone's heard that, you know, if you're lost in the woods, that people might walk in circles. Where this group of researchers actually decided to go test it. And they dropped people in the middle of the forest and then in the middle of the desert with GPS, left them alone, and then tracked how they proceeded. And what they discovered is their first test they conducted is a certain amount of them actually walked in circles. Not all of them, but some of them did. But then they did a follow-up study where they blindfolded the participants, and 100% of them walked in circles. And they weren't these giant, you know, 5-10 mile circles. They were like 66 feet. People just walked in circles, and it wasn't some giant blunder either. I mean, nobody made some enormous mistake. They described it as thousands of tiny miscalculations that added up to one big blunder in the brain. And that's exactly right in how brands react to the wild itself, in that they often face this challenge and unbeknownst to themselves, just begin walking in circles. And like 6 months goes by, a year goes by, and they haven't even moved. And it's because they don't recognize that they're walking in circles. And so we encourage organizations to do what the survivalists tell us to do in those situations where we're lost. If you don't have cues, if you don't know where you are, if you can't see the sun, can't see the moon, can't see a mountain in the distance, you are very likely to walk in circles. So as a company, you need to kind of orient yourself to the marketplace, find the sun, find true north. And if you're not doing that, if you're sort of just shooting from the hip, acting wildly, you're going to walk in circles. It's science.
So that was actually, you know, going to be one of my final questions here as we start to wrap up was, you know, what is one thing that we can do different as marketers to maybe think about which group, which 10-80-10, which one of those buckets we might be in, or to prevent ourselves from those circles? Would you say it's the looking for cues to orient ourselves, or is there something else that we need to make sure that we're on top of more fundamentally?
Well, orienting yourself is certainly part of the path to focus once more. The very first thing that survivalists will tell you is that when you discover you're lost, most people actually, they kind of panic and go and make the situation worse. They'll keep walking. They'll keep running. Some have even been documented as throwing their pack down, hiding from rescuers. People lose their minds in these situations. But the first thing that the Boy Scouts and survivalists will tell you is you need to stop. You actually need to sit down, and it's an acronym: stop, think, observe, plan. Now, when you're in this situation and your blood's flowing, your adrenaline's going, often that's the last thing you want to do. You know, your body's just kind of screaming for action. You're frozen, or your brain's going a mile a minute, or you're just running. But you need to stop. And this is where you actually can start re-exerting control over your mind, where when you're in that panic situation, the kind of feeling, emotional side of your brain has taken control. That's why you get tunnel vision. That's why you act wildly. If you force yourself to stop, you can begin to re-exert the thinking part of your brain, the rational part of your brain. Now, you can't stay there. You know, you're in a survival situation. You can't sit down all day. But that's the first step, and it's the last thing we often want to do, is stop. Once you've stopped, then you can look around, observe your surroundings, and begin to orient yourself to your marketplace, to your surroundings. And that those are the first two most immediate, most important things to do to equip you with the right information to know what action to take next.
Well, I think that, you know, there's so many things about this metaphor that I think are insightful and valuable today. And I think you talk about the challenge of that one thing, of stopping. And you noted that we don't want to do it, especially in, you know, challenging times. But I think that's also another byproduct of maybe you would call it the wild, but the culture that we find ourselves in, stopping in general is hard, mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, you could talk about that like from a life, you know, we're so relentless now, but I think even as marketers, we just will just keep doing it to do something. And mm-hmm. It feels like it's like your circles. It's, well, I'm walking, I don't exactly know where I'm going and probably in circles, but we're sending something out. We're making that video. Right. We're sending that, you know, daily email. And we may not have been able to get the benefits of stopping.
And the scary thing about that point, which is very good, is that there's research that shows that we're actually addicted to action. We get a little shot of dopamine every time we multitask, every time we check an email, every time we see a little red dot on our Facebook profile. And as marketers, we can get addicted to action because if we've done our job and things seem to be going well, we're not very good at just allowing it to continue. Often we feel like we have to keep doing something. And in that situation, usually we make things worse.
Well, and I think there's a lot of other other factors too that have made that, you know, we've talked for, you know, 20 years in, you know, consulting and management culture about having a bias towards action, and the Herb Kelleher, we have a strategic plan, it's called doing things, and then you take all of this new media that is just so easy to, I could step away and launch something right now. And you take that, add in the excitement of startup culture, and we're just, it's easy to, I think, get into those circles.
It's frenetic, and it's overwhelming. And it's not that action is bad. I mean, goodness, you have to take action. But it's, as usual, it comes back to balance. There are those organizations that are paralyzed by their planning and get stuck there. But there's also those organizations that can't stop doing. They can't even stop to think for a moment. And you have to do both in the right order and give yourself time to figure out this crazy world we're all living in.
Crazy indeed. Well, if we are switching gears from being in the wild and the survival nature of things, you know, I'm looking over my shoulder, making sure that there's no encroaching bear or something. Switching to something that that makes you smile, is there a brand recently that has elicited that sort of fun response from you?
You know, there's probably a few examples. I think one that I appreciate is probably Carl's Jr. in the way they've very publicly abandoned their sort of focus on sex selling and all of that in their new commercial. And I think it's a trend we've seen with GoDaddy and others that have really abandoned that method, which is really appealing to the our base nature, which I just think is the wrong thing to do as a marketer. And so I really appreciate not only that they did it, but the way they did it seemed smart you know, somebody thought about it. It wasn't just a press release. So that's probably the most recent thing I've appreciated.
You know, that's great. I don't always I always ask the tough question of a brand making me smile, but you brought up that reason, and it reminded me there was a great video going around sponsored by GoDaddy, so a great example of some sponsored content and a fun way to get their message out there. But it was, what if websites existed in real life? And it was these comedians, this little web short about, like, if a bad website was like an office with, like, you know, 404s and empty offices and stretched pixeled images. And
that's great.
It was funny, but it was also really relevant to what they've done. And I thought, you know, more than just saying, oh, don't go to the, like you said, that kind of base well that GoDaddy and Carl's Jr. did. The bigger thing is not that, is that I think you can say more about what your business actually does. And I think that that's true with Carl's Jr. And also over the past couple of years, as GoDaddy's been moving away from that, it's more about small business websites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. It's not only is the base point, you can, it's just, there's better ways to market and communicate. Yeah. There's more sophisticated ways to get your message across.
Well, it reminds me of, think about a month ago, Doug Kessler was on the podcast from Velocity Partners. And I think he said when he was at Ogilvy, you know, they always said, you're always going to be able to get attention with a gorilla and a tutu. And I think that, you know, using sex is very similar. You know, that's easy attention, exactly. But then what?
Exactly. It doesn't take a lot of brain power to come up with that first idea.
No. All right, Jonathan, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Definitely. You can find me at jonathandavidlewis.com. Learn more about my book, about my work. Of course, Brand vs. Wild is available on Amazon or anywhere books are sold. So I'm anywhere really online that you'd expect to have a presence. I'm there.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Jonathan, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thanks so much for having me, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, past guest Gabriella Mirabelli, who was on the podcast earlier in the year talking about millennials and branding for them, had me on her Up Next podcast where I talked about scrappy marketing. And we will link up to all of that, but go check that out. Speaking of checking out podcasts, you can check out links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes and Stitcher. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give the On Brand podcast a quick rating and review. It helps others find the show. And remember, On Brand is brought to you by my book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.